The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hewitt live inside the Beltway on this Tuesday, May 31st, in the year of our Lord 2022. That was the saddest Memorial Day, I think, since Memorial Day 2002, in 20 years. And I'm sure you feel it. I do. I still do. We'll be speaking a lot this week with senators about what, if any, legislative response is appropriate to the horrors of Uvalde and Buffalo and the loss of those 19 children and the two teachers and the victims in the Buffalo supermarket. And it's a discussion that can go off course very, very quickly, but I'll try and have it today. Senator Tom Cotton, tomorrow Senator Rick Scott. I hope to get John Cornyn, who is the very able leader of the Republican bipartisan working group. I'd like to get Senator Susan Collins, who comes from a state that is very, very friendly to weapons. And also, she is sort of the dead center of the Senate. I got to say on Special Report last night with Mike Emanuel, after Ben Domenech praised the selection of John Cornyn and expressed doubt that anything could happen, I got to say this, cut number 11.
Hugh, what are your expectations as lawmakers get together to discuss a possible path forward?
Well, I want to agree and disagree with Ben, Mike. I think John Cornyn is the perfect person, having served on the state Supreme Court of Texas. I think he also ought to consult with Rick Scott, who is governor of Florida. He's now senator from Florida. Passed legislation in the Sunshine State in the aftermath of the Parkland massacre. But I do think there is a path forward if expectations center on how do we protect innocent children like those in Uvalde against monsters like those that came. And that usually means armed police who are well-trained on the campus before the monster arrives. And I think if they follow the model from MAD, back in the days when the drinking age went to 21, federal dollars in exchange for state legislation, those federal dollars for the police on the campuses would, I think, get some states to study seriously the Florida model and others. But I've got to say, President Biden took us all backwards today by bringing 9mm handguns into the discussion, because there is simply no consensus anywhere for denying people the right to own handguns. It doesn't exist. And so the president sets back everything he touches. I got to say that about the Ukraine issue yesterday. He got asked about weapons for Ukraine. The president did it again. And my comment is cut number 12.
Hugh, what about Ukraine? What is the U.S. interest in Ukraine at this point?
We are interested in helping Ukraine win back its country. And I think the current president ought to take a page from former President Trump, who used to say, I'm not in the business of telling our enemies what I'm going to do or not do. Mm-hmm. Again, a misstep today.
Yeah, yesterday was a series of missteps by the president. Here's his comment on 9mm. I don't understand this. Cut number 5.
What's the difference? Why are so many people, not that many more people are being shot? This is now 20 years ago, 25 years. I said, why are they dying? And they showed me a x-ray. He said, a 22 caliber bullet will lodge in a lung, and we can probably get it out, maybe ever get it, and save the life. A 9mm bullet blows the lung out of the body. So the idea of these high-caliber weapons is that there is simply no rational basis for it in terms of what you see about self-protection, hunting.
You know, there's an 8-track tape playing in the president's head there, and nobody is talking about banning handguns, 9mm handguns. I believe they represent about 56% of the handguns owned in the United States. I'm not a gun owner, and so I don't know anything about guns. I know a lot about the Second Amendment. I reread Heller yesterday just to be smart in case Mike Emanuel sitting in for Brett asked me something. The president also talked about, here's his comment on the Ukrainian missiles, cut number 6.
We're not going to send to Ukraine rocket-assisted weapons
strike into Russia. Okay, so really, former President Trump had an all-purpose answer for things either he didn't know the answer to or which he didn't want to discuss, which is, I'm not in the habit of telling my enemies
what I'm going to do or not do that is actually a useful page that this president might learn from. Other news. Washington Post, U.S. marks Memorial Day weekend with 12 mass shootings. Now, that headline doesn't advance any discussion because a mass shooting, for example, in Chattanooga, where a gunfire erupts between gangs and four people or six people are wounded, is not the sort of mass shooting the United States is worried about. Some people obviously were injured, and it's unfortunate. But people who go to gunfights get in gunfights. People who go to school as fourth graders or shopping at a Buffalo market should have a sense of safety. I'm particularly concerned about schools. Rosaries, bouquets, and tiny caskets. Uvalde begins to bury its dead. Sacred Heart Church, the very Catholic town, is the center of the grieving, and your prayers for those families. I've told you Joe Biden ruled out sending weapons to Ukraine that strike into Russia. By the way, that could be a hand grenade, given that they border each other. It's just the dumbest thing in the world. The West must hold its nerve on Russia. I tweeted this out yesterday. I hope you're following my Twitter feed, because I try and put up there. You'll have to ignore the Browns and Guardians and Cavaliers tweets, but I just try and put stories and good comments. And this is an essay from the Financial Times by Gideon Rockman on how the West has got to hold firm and rearm Ukraine and push back the Russian offensive in the Donbass. They're getting a mile here and a half mile there, but the extraordinary toll on the poor Russian soldier who's been sent there by Putin. Suicide mission for Russian forces ordered to capture Severodonetsk. I don't know I'm saying anything Ukrainian correctly, but the Telegraph this morning talks about the inch-by-inch attempt to take more of the Donbass. For whatever reason, we don't know. Russia felt obliged, according to the Telegraph, to put out a statement yesterday that Vladimir Putin is healthy. No, he's not. Man is nuts. The Germans are turning on their failing leaders, according to the Telegraph. Good. They've completely welched on their deal. And the Germans understand that Scholz is a disaster. They want a do-over in their election. Russian forces push into pivotal city in eastern Ukraine. The fighting in the Donbass, again, just mile by mile. The government of Israel tells 100 Israelis in Turkey to leave as the Iranians' threat to their safety has grown, intelligence tells us. Oil has breached $120 a barrel. It's going to go higher as China reopens. That's the oil prices hit two-month high, says the Wall Street Journal, as China eases lockdowns. A senior Fed official has called for higher rates that start to stunt the U.S. economy. Yesterday, by the way, Great Britain released its year-over-year inflation, 8.7% in Great Britain. That is really extraordinary. The Mona Lisa was attacked by a nut yesterday. What is it with a 37-year-old man who pretends to be a granny in a wheelchair to throw a pie at the Mona Lisa? What's the difference between that person and someone who defaces the Mona Lisa? He might have. He didn't. He didn't know there was glass there. It's just a stunt. I'm all for 5 years in jail for stunts. No more slaps on the wrist, because stunts require police. And that means police can't be where monsters come. So stunt people enable monsters. Do you understand? Stunt people enable monsters by spreading police thin. Top Gun Maverick grabs a Memorial Day weekend box office record, $156 million in the United States. Bravo. I'll tell you now that my son-in-law is one of the pilots in the movie, and they had a blast supporting the production of that off the Teddy Roosevelt many years ago now, many, many years ago. And they had a blast, and we had a blast watching it and knowing a little bit of the inside story. By the way, Tom Cruise was very professional working with the pilots and their crews and the carrier crew and everybody else. All I heard was that was a very professional operation on both sides. It's funny that when you see Tom Cruise as an actor playing a real pilot, when you know real fighter pilots and the people who support them, and you realize that pretend is pretend and real is real, and people who have 700 landings on a carrier are different from you and me. There's a headline I want to go at length on at some point. I don't know if I have time. Summer worker shortage means things will be closed again. Pools, restaurants, and camps cut operation even though demand is back. You know, it will take one announcement from Harvard and Yale or the College Admissions Council that 40-hour work between your sophomore and junior year and your junior and senior year will be counted as very vital to understanding whether or not you will work hard enough to succeed in college. I'll ask Larry Arnn about that this week. I really do think that colleges ought to say, we expect you to work. Because if you can't work during the summer, if you're lying around on the internet, you know, texting on 4chan with your goofball friends, one of whom turns into a monster, then you're not going to be a good college student. We don't want you. That's all those jobs would get filled. Finally, Egypt has unearthed a trove of artifacts, 250 mummies and crucially, intact papyrus, sealed from 500 years before the birth of Christ. Another Book of the Dead beckons. It's really fascinating in the Washington Post. I'll be right back. My number is 1-800-520-1234. What do you want the bipartisan working group to accomplish in the Senate? I'm Hugh Hewitt. Tell me what you think. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. David M. Drucker covers the Beltway like no one else for the Washington Examiner. Follow him on Twitter at David M. Drucker. David, Senator Cornyn will be leading the Republican effort to respond, if a response is actually possible from the federal level, to the massacre in Uvalde and Buffalo. Who else is on that working group? Do you know?
Well, I think, again, the question is who's going to become consequential in that working group. I mean, obviously, Senator Pat Toomey, in years past, has tried to find a way to pass legislation dealing with gun safety or how you improve gun safety without chipping away at gun rights that are enshrined in the Constitution. So I think the Cornyn position in this working group is important because his Second Amendment bona fides are strong, and he's got a really good relationship with Mitch McConnell. And so obviously I left out he's a senator from Texas. But the fact that he's a former number two in the Republican Senate hierarchy and may want to be in leadership again, and that him and McConnell are tight, I think, is what makes him one to watch here.
I also want to add, he was on the Texas State Supreme Court. So he's a jurist of accomplishment who understands the Constitution and constitutional rights and federalism. But I've named the guests I asked for this week. I've got Senator Cotton coming up. Said I'd like Senator Cornyn. I want Senator Collins, who comes from a gun state but is a moderate. My Maine is a very gun-friendly state. And, of course, Senator Rick Scott, who is Governor Scott, oversaw the legislation in response to Parkland that was widely regarded as breakthrough. Those are the big four, in my view. And I'd also like to talk to Rob Portman, because Ohio is a mixed state. That means that there are many gun control advocates and many gun ownership advocates in Ohio. It's like the rest of the country split.
Yeah, and I think Senator Rick Scott is watching him, as I think smart on your part, in that when he was governor of Florida, he signed legislation that was not necessarily, the legislation he signed in his state, and he was a big part of putting that legislation together. It was not, voters in Florida responded well to it. Not all gun rights activists were pleased with it, but he was willing to sign it because he thought it was a proper response to what happened in Parkland. Obviously, Democrats thought he should have gone further, but that makes his thoughts on any emerging legislation here extremely interesting.
Yeah, the 10% on either extreme, amend the Constitution and confiscate guns or leave my guns alone completely. I want to be able to buy automatic weapons. They are loud. They take up bandwidth. They do not represent the 80%. And I think Rick Scott saw past that. I'm curious now, I've named the Republicans. Who on the Democratic side will acknowledge that the Second Amendment is an individual right that has teeth and cannot be unrestricted absent a compelling reason and narrowly drawn provisions?
Well, I think we have to look at where Democrats have been on the past on this if we're trying to figure out where they might be this time around. I mean, obviously, Senator John Tester of Montana, a Democrat who has always been very sensitive to gun rights because of his state. And Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, for all the obvious reasons. You know, even Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, who's always the Democrat and at the center of these things, these negotiations since Sandy Hook, seems to have exhibited a good understanding of where Republicans are on this and what the constitutional limitations are. And, you know, I think a lot of people ask questions such as, well, why can't we just get rid of automatic weapons? But, of course, you know, there are a lot of weapons that are technically semi-automatic weapons, but that are not, you know, the Gatling guns that people think of when they think of, why can't we just get rid of automatic weapons? And he seems to be pretty well versed in these things. So even though his opinions may be to the left of someone like Kester or Manchin, I pay attention to him because he seems to understand the issue from a mechanical sense.
And, well, I think Senator Murphy can. Important. I think he can move a conversation along, because if he agrees to something, that means it's an 80% issue.
Yeah. Yeah. The key here is, Hugh, is, you know, as you know, but as I've covered these things over the years, gun rights, and I don't know if Democrats totally understand this, but, you know, gun rights is such a determinative issue in terms of how you vote, at least in federal elections, for Republicans. And even though Democrats feel strongly about this, Democratic voters, it's not a determinative issue in the same way it is for Republicans. And it's that feeling among Republican voters that actually pushes what happens in Washington versus the other way around. And I just don't think Democrats understand that.
Well, the approach to a federal solution is also, I think, a sine non qua here. If there is no federal statute coming out, but there is a possibility of a federal carrot and stick approach. David M. Drucker, I'll be reading you very closely this week. Nobody knows the Senate like David Drucker. I really mean that. Like, nobody knows the Senate like David Drucker. And so follow what he has to write. Follow him on Twitter. Follow me to Next Hour. His colleague Byron York comes along. Senator Tom Cotton later in the show. I'm interested in your phone calls. What would you like to see this bipartisan working group produce, if anything? 1-800-520-1234. Connect you to the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. On this Monday, May 31st in the year of our Lord 2022. I'm talking all week about what you would like to see a Senate bipartisan working group propose for the Senate to initiate, if anything. And I'm beginning the conversation this hour with Byron York of the Washington Examiner. You see him on Fox News. He is also, of course, prolific on Twitter and is very sober and very aware of the remarkable convergence of issues and emotions. Good morning, Byron. One of the saddest Memorial Days in memory, marked by a lot of people talking quietly as opposed to shouting about what, if anything, can be done to prevent monsters invading the classrooms of fourth graders. What do you hear?
Well, I think the thing that's striking about what's being said on Capitol Hill is how modest the proposals are at the moment. It's like we've had an incredible shrinking gun control debate. If you listen to Senator Chris Murphy, he's the Democrat from Connecticut, who's kind of taking the lead in this. He's not talking about an assault weapons ban. He's not talking about universal background checks. He's saying maybe we can do something smaller. And I think that is behind Mitch McConnell deputizing Senator Cornyn to be in talks about this. I think they're going to look for something that would be smaller, might make some improvement around the edges, but won't at all address what happened in Uvalde or what happened in Buffalo before that.
Byron, back in, you may be too young to remember when Mothers Against Drunk Driving successfully pressured the Congress to do carrot and stick, meaning we are not allowing you access to federal highway funds until you raise the drinking age to 21. So to me, the approach that has to be put on the table is money for school protection. And I mean armed police. I'm not going to use school resource officer Orwellian speak anymore. Armed police at schools, and that's expensive. There are 131,000 K-12 public and private schools, and I think they each need two police officers. If you don't want to have this happen again, they've got to be there and not like the school resource officer in Uvalde off having a coffee somewhere. They have to be on the campus before children arrive until children leave. That's a $45 billion using TSA extrapolation. No, I mean, a TSA budget. That's $45 billion a year. I don't know if that's doable, but I certainly wouldn't try and legislate for every state because every state has a different culture when it comes to weapons and self-protection for reasons largely related to geography and the fact that even in Uvalde, it took 7 minutes from a 911 call for an officer to arrive.
Well, this is where the sort of laboratories of democracy come into effect. We've been hearing that New York, New Jersey, and California are going to do something. You know, I think one thing that's kind of instructive is that Florida, after the Parkland shooting in 2018, did enact a gun measure. Republican legislature with a Republican governor, Governor Rick Scott, now the senator from Florida, signed it. And I believe it raised the age to 21.
It did.
It imposed sort of a red flag law. Although we should say that New York has a red flag law.
It does.
It did not stop the Buffalo shooting. So states are freer. I mean, there is the right to bear arms is an enumerated right in the Constitution, so they can only go so far. But states are freer to enact some controls. And I agree with you. I don't see why we shouldn't have those enacted. And if some of them are particularly effective, perhaps they could be enacted on a national basis.
I went back and read the seminal Heller decision penned by Justice Scalia, in which he noted, yep, nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. And so Heller established the individual right, but like the First Amendment rights, they are not absolute. And it's, by the way, it's a talking point to say they're not absolute. We know that. The question is, how best, I think, Byron, you can't stop Buffalo. All right. You have to find those people, but you can stop Uvalde. That's Hugh Hewitt's view. I don't know if it's widely shared. I think you can have armed police 24/7 during school on every campus in America, two of them. And I think they can stop this. And I believe they have secondary effects, network effects, which are very good throughout the community, and they're worth the money. But do you agree with me?
Well, I think the thing that has been really stunning to people about Uvalde has been the failure not only of the, quote, school resource officer, but of the actual police who show up. And then do not go into the school, and they wait and they wait, and then there are some Border Patrol agents who finally lead them in. And we don't know exactly if lives could have been saved if they had gone in immediately.
Byron, I have a question, a reporter's question. The school district had its own police department. The incident commander was the chief of the 6-person police department. Someone needs to go back and find out, and maybe you know, why did they have their own police department? Because if that's not an invitation to Barney Fife, I don't know what is. The idea that he was the incident commander is appalling to me. And I, as a parent or a family member of a victim, I would be so outraged. And I would go back and find out, why did a school district establish a separate police force? That is crazy. Because
that is an excellent question. And no, it's an excellent question. We should have an answer to that. But I think the fact that they did make these nods towards school security indicates that what you're saying about a 2-person police presence at every school is what you're trying to say is this time we need to do it right.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It can be done right.
Because doing it has it failed in Uvalde.
Matt Vespa, by the way, had an article last week in Town Hall about the 4 occasions in 2018 and 2021, 3 in 2018, 1 in 2021, where police officers stopped would-be mass murderers in parking lots or at doors. So it has worked.
Yeah. And
As far as Buffalo is concerned, I do agree with you to some extent. I mean, you have a guy who's writing a manifesto which says what he's going to do. And it, I don't know if you've read it. I have.
I have not.
It discusses in inordinate length the relative advantages of this helmet versus that helmet, of this vest versus that vest. He makes several points where he's got to do this because he's hiding it from his parents, who I don't think had any reason to know what was going on. But this guy is posting this stuff in a very obscure part of the internet. I'm not sure how we address that.
Key interesting fact here. At my conservatives at Mark Zuckerberg dinner, I asked Mark if there was the potential with artificial intelligence to identify Columbine killers. And he said, no, there's not. So it's not on the table. But if there was, would we even want them to use it, Byron?
No, I think we'd feel very uncomfortable.
Yes, exactly.
With that level of surveillance. On the other hand, this is not the first shooting that we've had in which we go back and we find a guy who's been posting posts that say, I'm going to kill somebody.
Yeah, the monsters
and
of the Fortnite both did that. Both of
it's
them did
that.
It's
very frustrating afterwards to see that. And you think, well, what isn't there some way sort of to pick that up? But usually it's done by what they call human intelligence. Somebody hears him. He says something to somebody and they report it to police. That's the old fashioned way of finding out if somebody is kind of a ticking time bomb. But it makes it very, very, because he went to some lengths to conceal what he was doing. And it makes it very difficult. You know, there are some of these measures that I don't have a particular problem with based on what you read, the passage you read from Heller, which is the age of 21 thing I don't have a problem with, although there has been a case in the Fourth Circuit, hasn't there?
I'm not familiar with it.
I think I was kind of struck by it. It basically struck down an age of 21 requirement. So I don't know where that would go legally, but I don't have any problem with that. Certainly red flag laws, if they include enough due process, but if they include due process, they'll be slow. So there are some things that can be done, but all of this stuff is just around the edges.
Yeah. The problem is the monster, right? Where do they come from? How do you find them? How do you stop them before they kill? And how do you ever know that you successfully stopped a monster from killing? You can't. But Byron York, you'll be on the case. I'll be reading everything you write about it in your morning newsletter and on Fox. I'll be watching. Follow him on Twitter at Byron York. Come right back. More on the Hugh Hewitt Show ahead. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway on Tuesday, May 31st, 2022. I'm joined by Senator Tom Cotton. For those of you living in caves, Senator Cotton is from Arkansas. It represents Arkansas now in his seventh year, second term. Before that, he was a member of the House. Before that, a member of the 101st Airborne, a member of the Old Guard. He has his Ranger tab. He's familiar with weapons of war. He serves in combat. He is the father of small children. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. I'm good. It's good to be back on with you.
Senator Cornyn has been appointed by Leader McConnell as the sort of Republican who will negotiate with Democrats over what, if anything, to do in the aftermath of Uvalde and Buffalo. Will you be participating in those talks directly or indirectly? And what's your initial thought on that process?
I will monitor what Senator Cornyn and others are doing. Of course, it's hard to evaluate it before the fact. And in Uvalde in particular, we are still gathering the facts to figure out exactly what happened. And I think it's important that we have those facts before we try to devise solutions to situations that may or may not have occurred. So, for instance, obviously, we thought that early last week that there was a school resource officer present and that the police went in and immediately disarmed the shooter. We now know that not to be the case. So we need to get to all the facts first before we make a decision about how to address this latest mass murder. I will say that I don't think any of these terrible atrocities have a single or a simple cause behind them. And therefore, I think any call for a single or simple solution will probably fail. That it requires a careful and layered approach that addresses not just school safety, but also, the willingness of teachers and coaches and parents and others to identify troubled young boys. Because these shootings are always young boys, and they're almost always troubled young boys, early to try to help identify who may be at risk of having this kind of mental break and getting them the help they need in advance. Now, we can also work on school safety in terms of ingress and egress points or the presence of school resource officers. But again, I don't think a single solution is going to work. I don't think there's a single cause for these mass murders.
Senator, I had a caller earlier who I agreed with because, of course, it was the position I hold, which is I do not understand why they are not armed police on school grounds when school children, especially defenseless school children at the age of, primary grades are present. And the resource officer in Texas wasn't there. Resource officer is a misnomer. I used armed police. And in the four occasions where they have been there that Matt Vespa has written up, they effectively stopped would-be killers in parking lots because they were good and responded well. It's expensive, though. I mean, there are 131,000 K-12 public and private schools, and it's expensive to put officers there. I've had officers call the show and say, we don't want rookies and you don't want retirees. You want officers about 5 years into their tenure to do 2 years on campuses. What do you think of that general observation that generally you stop monsters with guns by armed police who are trained?
Well, IQ, I think that's generally correct. In general, the more police, the less crime. That's true at schools as well. As I said, we need to figure out exactly what happened at the elementary school in Uvalde with their police officer and why he wasn't present and why he wasn't able to neutralize that shooter from the very beginning. In general, any place is going to be safer if it has police presence. And I think you're right, too, about the police that you want at a school. You want it to be not someone who's on his first gig or not someone who's, counting down the days until retirement. You want someone who's seasoned and experienced and has sound judgment. Again, we need to get to the facts about what happened in Uvalde, and it's something that we can incorporate into training lessons and plans. But again, as you saw there, training is only, and plans and procedures only as good as the people who are implementing them, and people make mistakes. And it's clear that some people made mistakes at Uvalde.
One of the things that stands out to me, and I asked Byron York about this, is that the officer in charge, the incident commander, was the chief of the Uvalde Police School Department, of which there are six members. I don't know when someone thought it was a good idea to stand up a six-person police department, like Mayberry RFD, and I do not know why that happened. I suspect someone objected to the police being on the campus. I don't know. But it does seem to me that if the MAD approach, Mothers Against Drunk Driving approach, the federal funding for security at schools comes along, that it ought to be conditioned on having serious oversight of the officers in charge of school safety. A six-person police department for schools is not a smart idea. And I think I can say that conclusively at the outset. It just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I mean, Hugh, that's a state-by-state decision. My understanding is that Texas is more common to have school district-specific police departments. I'm not aware of many, really. I'm not aware of any, I don't think, in Arkansas. There may be some here and there. But in general, we rely on city police and county sheriffs. And it's been, good cooperative relationships between school districts on the one hand and city police and county sheriff's department on the other hand. Obviously, those are two different agencies, so there's got to be some agreements about lines of authority. But the most important thing to have is tactically sound and proficient officers on the scene. Again, we'll get to the bottom of this. There were, by reports I've seen, 19 officers present. And I'm confident that either the FBI or the Texas Department of Public Safety is doing a thorough after-action review and interviewing every one of those officers. So we'll know exactly what happened. But it appears obvious that they made serious mistakes in not neutralizing the shooter quickly. I mean, there may have been mistakes between the communications of the 911 dispatchers and the police on site as well, because it's clear that we have multiple calls from inside the classroom the children were still alive, and the shooter was still present. I think at some point there were even a few shots fired that the police officers certainly would have heard, since 9/11 dispatchers fired. And this is very common to what we learned in the Army, which is when you're under fire, especially, for instance, if you're under a sniper fire, then the first thing you have to do is neutralize the shooter. Even if your battle buddy to your right or left is shot, that means that by definition, you and everyone else are still within range of that shooter. So you have to neutralize the shooter even before you tend to the wounded or evacuate everyone else to safety. That was true. What we learned in the Army, it's true whenever you have, a deranged shooter at a school or at a shopping market or anywhere else. The first step the police take has to be to neutralize the shooter.
Senator, I'd like to know your thoughts. When the president starts talking about 9mm, which is, I think, 56% of handguns owned in the United States, I said on Fox News special report last night, that sets the conversation backward. There is no appetite for a ban on handguns in the United States. None. Zero. What's your reaction to the president's ramblings about 9mm?
Well, Hugh, I think it shows that the president is confused about what happened, and he's just confused about firearms as well. This is a common feature I've seen in Washington over the years, is the people most enthusiastic about regulating guns know the least about guns. We had the nominee for the ATF last week ahead of us. This is a man who ran for attorney general in Ohio and called for an assault weapons ban, and I asked him to define an assault weapon, and he couldn't do it. And the reason he couldn't do it, Hugh, is that there really is no such thing as an assault weapon. There's a rifle, there's a shotgun, there's a pistol of various calibers. But an assault weapon is a category of weapons. It's designed by mostly cosmetic features that are labeled by lawyers and lobbyists and politicians in Washington. Yet people still talk about that as if it is a definable category of weapons that could be regulated by law. Or they go out and talk about things like 9mm as opposed to 22 or 5.56 or 7.62. Some of them seem like not even know the difference between a rifle and a shotgun at various times. Before they start trying to infringe upon the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens, you'd expect them to at least familiarize themselves with the most basic facts about firearms.
Now, I had a parent call earlier who pretty much spoke for me as a grandparent. And you're a young parent. I'm a young grandparent. We do not want our children growing up in schools that are target. And he asked me to urge every senator, and I will, to stay focused on protecting innocent children in schools. That does require the investigation you talked about, but I've seen so many comments that have immediately moved on to other things. Do you think the Senate working group can hold focus at least on a problem set that is defined and manageable, at least in a conversation? Because if it wanders all over the place, there won't even be a conclusion on the specific issue of children in fourth grade being protected.
It seems at least that's the focus right now, Hugh. And like you said, I think that would be a better focus than a sprawling debate about banning entire categories of firearms when most people talking about banning them don't even know what they really are. And support for that among the American people is quite low.
Now, Senator, with 2 minutes left, I want to switch to Ukraine. President Biden yesterday ruled out sending rockets that could hit Russia. That's another stupid comment because any rocket can hit Russia, depending on where you are on the Ukraine border. And I go back to former President Trump used to say he didn't want to tell our enemies what we were going to do or not do. I kind of think that what used to be laughed at is now actually a pretty good response for this situation. What do you think?
Hugh, they're continuing this foolish lawyerly distinction about offensive and defensive weapons. I mean, call me crazy, Hugh, but Russia invaded Ukraine. Ukraine is defending its own territory. I think any weapon is inherently defensive. And Ukraine needs longer range artillery and rocket systems to make sure that it can reach the Russian troops that are on Ukrainian soil. But this is part of a pattern, you're right, going back to the fall of Joe Biden continuing to say what we will not do. He said we will never put troops into Ukraine. I don't think we should do that either. I don't think we should simplify Vladimir Putin's calculation by telling him that, though. In fact, it's so silly, Hugh, now that we have not yet put the U.S. Marines back at our embassy in Kyiv. Our diplomats are there. The office staff are there. Yet they won't put Marines to defend the embassy, as they do, Hugh, in downtown Moscow. Because Joe Biden announced we wouldn't have troops in Ukraine, and now you've got everybody in the White House chasing like a cat chasing their tail, figuring how they're going to let the Marines do their job to defend the front gates of the embassy while respecting the president's announcement that we're not going to put troops into Ukraine. I would contrast that to you with, say, what Ronald Reagan did in Afghanistan. In today's dollar, he spent billions supporting the Afghans fighting back against Russia when they invaded that country. But he almost never talked about it in public, and he certainly never ruled anything in or out, even though he never seriously considered putting troops into Afghanistan, because he never wanted to do anything that would simplify Russia's war planning then, the way Joe Biden continues to simplify Putin's planning now.
Well, and fully said. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you. The first of many senators I'll be talking to this week.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.